Hi, welcome back to Conversations with Jackie and Bobby Angel. I am one of your hosts, Bobby Angel, and with me today is Jonathan Conrad, the Catholic woodworker. He is a husband, a father of three boys. He's a full-time software developer, and he runs the apostolate, the Catholic Woodworker. Jonathan, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Bobby.
So I've admired your work for a long time, and we have been internet friends for a few years, but we've never talked in real time. So this is exciting for me. I've got one of your like home altars on my desk, the little crucifix and the wood guy I got like years and years ago. I'm just excited to talk to you and to get into how you got into woodworking, your ministry as a whole, and then other elements of spiritual and human formation that have really got your attention as of late. So do you mind sharing your story?
Sure. So let's see. I've been doing woodworking since I was a kid. I would visit my grandparents in Arkansas over the summers and over Thanksgiving break. And I would spend at least a couple hours, if not, you know, a couple of days in the shop building things with my grandfather. So I kind of developed a love and appreciation and a comfort in building things with wood. Growing up, we had little pieces of furniture kind of scattered throughout the house that my grandfather built for us. And so it started there. And then when we moved into a home, this would have been 14 years ago, I had a table saw. It was a graduation gift. And I started building stuff for the house. And so that that childhood passion was kind of rekindled, and it led to me making picture frames that I showed our family photographer of the pictures that she took of our family. She loved the pictures and wanted more for her clients, and that quickly became a side hustle. And so I've been doing that for, I did that for 3 years until I realized that it was kind of taking me away from my family instead of being a way to, I don't know, something that was ordered towards the good of my vocation. And so I took some time off. And when I went back into it, that's when I kind of went from this Conrad Designs thing of just making picture frames to the Catholic Woodworker. And so that was 10 years ago, around the time that the twins were born. So our younger two are twins. And I've been, you know, the Catholic Woodworker has been evolving ever since.
So did you grow up Catholic? Was that like always part of your story?
Yes.
Or is that
grew
what you came
Catholic.
To?
Yep. Grew up Catholic, went to church every Sunday. I mean, maybe I was too sick to go one time, but I mean, my dad worked in engineering and traveled quite a bit. So lots of frequent flyer miles. We got to go some cool places. Didn't matter where we were in the world. Church on Sunday was the whole travel was always built around where are we going to church on Sunday? So I grew up with an appreciation for the importance of the Mass and the importance of prayer. You know, my family taught me the rosary. We prayed the rosary as a family, both just my immediate family as well as extended family. And so the foundation was there. I went to college though. And I mean, like the second week I forgot to go to Mass, and looking back on it, it's kind of shocking how easy it was for that to just fall apart. And so it wasn't until we got engaged, we wanted to get married in the church, that, you know, I started going to Mass again weekly. and then it wasn't until I became a father and realized, hey, life is a lot harder than I thought it was. I think I need some help, where I started to kind of turn to prayer again. And that's where I went back to the rosary. It was like, this was the prayer that I remember growing up. This is the prayer I know how to pray. I need some help here, because I'm feeling overwhelmed by work and fatherhood. And I turned to the rosary.
And what a beautiful witness of masculinity in your spirituality. It was your dad making that stand of wherever we are in the world, reverence to God, it matters and it's important.
And yeah, because it wasn't like, oh, mom says we have to go to church, right? It was mom and dad. And like a memory that came up recently, and I shared this with my parents when I saw them last. that, like, I remember like it was yesterday. My dad had a 4 a.m. adoration hour on Fridays. And so one Friday morning during the school year, I think it was during the school year, I went with him. I got there and within 5 minutes, I was passed out, was asleep, right? Because I'm in eighth grade, I think, at this time. And then afterwards, we went golfing. And, you know, it's like I didn't appreciate it at the time. I have a fond memory of it, right? I'm grateful for that memory, but like I didn't appreciate the sacrifice that that was, because he did this for years, and I knew about it, right? And it's like, I guess it's not surprising that like I love adoration. I go often, and but yes, it wasn't just a mom says so and dad shrugs along. It was definitely both mom and dad. You know, my dad did set a good example in that regard, and I'm really grateful for it.
Yeah, I think it's such a beautiful witness to parents like you, like me, that it's not so much about the exact recall of the catechism and all like the facts of the faith, or that if they never fidget during mass, we're somehow they'll be good. It's about more being caught than taught, and our kids remembering these memories of us praying the rosary together, of giving to the poor, of making holy hours at really obscene times of the day, that are like, wow, it's worth the sacrifice. Like the faith matters. So I think that's just such a gift. And so back to your story about the woodworking part, you left it behind for a little bit. You entered the working world, but then how did it come back into your life? And specifically, how did you feel called to start making rosaries in particular?
Yeah. So I think the realization of the importance of prayer more than just like following the rules. I wish I could say I remember making a conscious decision and remember why I made the conscious decision. What I do remember is like a sequence of events at work and in my personal life that kind of at some point led to, hey, I should be praying the rosary every day. And it really, like, to summarize it as succinctly as possible, it was anxiety, where I had, this might be too much information, but it's like I had prescription deodorant from stress. I didn't realize it at the time that it was stress related. I was just like, I'm sweating a lot more than I used to. Looking back, and I had high blood pressure. I've never had high blood pressure in my entire life. And I remember very vividly two or three accounts where I had what many people describe as like a mild panic attack, where like I felt like I couldn't breathe and I started to like hyperventilate. And it's, I wish I could say like, oh, that just immediately changed my life, right? It's like, no, like that probably happened. And then maybe 3 months later, I thought to myself, maybe I should pray. And then 3 months after that, but eventually I got to the point where I started praying the rosary on the way to work. And I can honestly say that I intentionally chose on my way to work because I didn't want to give God too much time. It's like, I got to drive there anyways. I'm listening to Bob and Tom on the radio, which is not a great show. It's like, I'll just turn the radio off and pray. And like, I even admitted that like, I'm going to work in my head while I'm praying. Like, I'm just going to say the words out loud so that I don't get distracted. I'm going to check the box. I'm praying. I'm going to think about work the whole time. And I did, but I kept doing it and I started to appreciate it. And then at some point my wife, gave me a rosary. It was a beautiful olive wood rosary. It was made of chain and like pretty much not everyone, but those types of chain rosaries, in spite of the beads being beautiful, the chain doesn't last. And so after, I don't know, a week or a month, however long it was, the chain broke. And then I fixed it and it broke again and I fixed it. And eventually I just gave up. And so I continued to pray the rosary on the steering wheel. right? You got 10 fingers, hopefully. And so you can pray the rosary with your fingers. And so then I made like a wood rosary ring. Then I made it and that broke. And then I made another one and it wasn't comfortable. And then I made my own chain rosary. It was just a pocket rosary. I didn't have the patience to make a full rosary. I just made pocket rosaries. And I liked it. And I posted it on Instagram because I was already, you know, everything started on Instagram. So it's Catholic Woodworkers on Instagram. I shared it. Hey, can I buy one? Sure, I'll make you one. I make one and then I make three and then I make five. And then all of a sudden Amazon doesn't have the parts I need anymore because I bought them all. And I was like, also, I'm the Catholic woodworker and I'm making rosaries out of like stone. I need, like, where do I find wood beads? But then I was like, more importantly, I don't want to make chain rosaries. It takes too long. I don't like it. I need to make cord rosaries. And I don't know if I even knew about rugged rosaries at the time, because I feel like they're the original rosary maker, like U.S. rosary cord maker. I don't think anyone was making them before they were. I don't think I knew about them. If I did, I don't remember. But I knew that I didn't want to use chain. I wanted to use cord. I wanted to use wood beads. And I knew that I needed to come up with some knot to connect the rosary. I didn't know what kind of knot it was. And YouTube wasn't really that prevalent then. I mean, people were on YouTube, right? But you couldn't look up everything. You couldn't look up how to make a rosary on YouTube. And so I have a journal entry in one of my journals because I journal quite often. I was like, Mary, if you want me to make durable rosaries, then I need you to teach me how to make this knot. And I don't know what it's called. And literally the very next day, I was bored during a work meeting or something like that. And it was just like, oh, I figured it out. I figured out. I went home, I tried it and it worked. And I told a friend and they're like, yeah, that's a barrel knot. I didn't know that. Right. I looked it up. I was like, sure enough, that's what it was. But I didn't find it. Mary like showed it to me. And that sounds crazy, but like I have journal entry proof of this. And so I made my first rosary. And same thing, I shared it. People were like, hey, can you make more? Like, maybe. And so I started making more. And I actually made a couple rosaries where I cut the beads myself and sanded them on the lathe. And that took like 3 hours per rosary. And I was like, this is not scalable. And so I found a company that sells wood beads. And so I started buying beads from them. And, you know, it just kept going, right? It's like, okay, well, I need 10. Now I need 50 strands. Now I need 100. Now I need 500. And things get incrementally more difficult because I start buying out all the suppliers on Etsy. And things, you know, and so it just keeps snowballing from there.
Well, how beautiful that it really came out of your own personal devotion. It wasn't you trying to find like a niche in the market. You were really kind of came back to peace through the rosary and you felt called to use your own like hands to make something, and you put it out there and there was a demand, there was a need. And so like in terms of like your vocation being to love God and your next vocation being your marriage, but then like your work vocation, so to speak, like yeah, there's your job, like your occupation, but like where God has blessed you. And like, you can look at like the lineage from your grandfather to your dad, to you, like how you like, just, it's beautiful to me how the faith can be like, your faith can be brought into the world through this thing that you weren't even expecting and not even looking for where is the next thing I could maybe latch onto. It was, I'm going to put this out there. And as it's blessed me, and it's, you see in like the need, like people are continually seeking out your work and being blessed by it.
Yeah. Because I didn't do this on purpose.
Right.
It kind of happened on accident. It's like, obviously God, it's always on purpose for him, but like this definitely happened on accident. I didn't say one day I'm going to build a rosary business and I got to work. It's like, I like making my own things. So even if at the time there were hundreds of companies selling cord rosaries, I still would have wanted to make it myself because that's just kind of my nature. I like creating things. I like building things. And if I can do it myself, I'm probably going to do it myself. You know, because that's how I grew up, very comfortable doing things on my own. So yeah, it definitely happened by accident. I think when I started to be intentional and purposeful was my wife had given me the Champions of the Rosary book by Father Calloway. And this was over Lent. I don't know when it was, but I devoured the book. And by the end of the book, I think I came to the realization that, like, at this point, I'd been praying the rosary probably daily for, like, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, let's say 3 conservatively. And so I felt like I could confidently say at that point after reading this book that, like, okay, Mary, the rosary, obviously it's always to Jesus through Mary, right? So through Mary and the rosary, I found my way back to Jesus, both in prayer, in relationship, in the Eucharist, both in adoration and at Mass. And I was like, okay, I've got all these people I love and I care about. I want them to find what I've found. And so instead of like arguing about theology and Catholic teaching and all this stuff, I'm just gonna do what the book says. I'm gonna be a champion of the rosary. And so I started a blog, because at the time, right, that's how old we are. That mm-hmm. was the cool thing, is to have a blog. Again, they're like, I hadn't even discovered Matt Frad yet. I don't think he had a Pints with Aquinas channel yet. And before it was a YouTube channel, it was a podcast, so that everyone knows, right?
Oh yeah. It was Pints used to be just a straight audio podcast of him breaking down Aquinas's teachings.
Yeah. So this was like, I think 2 years before that, I was like, I'm going to write a blog. And I quickly learned that, like, I'm a mediocre author. I can write okay. Sam Guzman's way better than me. And so I kind of, and people weren't saying, hey, Jonathan, when's your next article coming out? They're like, hey, when can I buy the next batch? Like, when's the next batch of rosaries ready?
Yeah. They're like, about your blog. Now back to the rosaries.
Yeah. And so I think there was a point where I concluded that, you know, we all have different gifts, and the gift that God has given me that seems to be most in demand is my creative gift of building products. And so I launched a website where you could order stuff on my website. And that's, you know, it's probably, we're on our 3rd or 4th version of the website, but that's when things started to really pick up steam. And kind of go from this little ministry to a legitimate business that, you know, at this point we have 3 full-time employees, like 5 or 6 part-time employees, and an additional 6 or 8 contractors making rosaries. We've got rosary makers spread out across the country where we ship them parts and they send back finished rosaries. So, you know, it's definitely evolved from just this little hobby to a ministry to like a legitimate manufacturing operation. And I've had to learn a lot in the process and change a lot in the process and put different hats on and, you know, like I said, learn different skills that I never thought I would care to learn or want to learn, but I have nonetheless, and I'm grateful for it. But even so, like, again, it was never really on purpose to build what it has become. It's always been a response to, okay, do we grow or do we just cap it here? Because I can't do this anymore the way it is. And the answer was always let it grow. And that meant hiring people and learning new skills and, you know, running a different kind of business than I originally thought it was going to be, because it's different when you're making 50 rosaries versus 1,000. I couldn't be happier with where it is now. But I definitely am grateful for where it is. And I'm grateful that, like, God got us here, because I would have messed it up many times over, you know, if we went my path.
Well, 100% in your just surrender to that. And I hope anyone listening who is maybe a little fearful of putting your gifts, your talents out there, like you never know. Like you never know where God is wanting to use it and wants your yes. And you don't need to know everything. You don't need to know how to run a business. It's just get started, put it out there. And I also love that we, you know, we could do another hour on like what you've learned business wise, but we won't, maybe for a future episode. I love that we're living in the era of masculine rosaries, because growing up it was glow in the dark or very dainty rosaries that would break on impact. So now you've got rosaries you could like scale a building with between your stuff, rugged rosaries. Like it's just, it's very cool as a man to like materially be in this era of like rosaries that just feel like, yeah,
they were made for you.
Yeah, they were made for me. And then I wanted to ask you at a broader level, like why should anyone, but why should men in particular pray the rosary?
There's a couple of answers. I think the first one is like the easiest one, which is because your mom said so. Like sometimes that's good enough, right? It's like, okay. And then you could like caveat with, if you found something that works better for you, by all means, continue. But if you continually find yourself in a place where you tried something else and failed, and you're tired of failing at having a daily prayer habit, then either pick up for the first time a rosary or begin again with the rosary. And this leads to my second argument, why the rosary? Because we're really weak and we're kind of lazy. And I mean this in a most endearing way possible, right?
Right.
We're not that creative. We're weak. We're easily distracted. And it's like all of these things have, the rosary has answers for all these things. One is we don't have to be creative because the prayer is already written for us. So even when we're not feeling like praying and having like some deep, intimate conversation with God, it's already been written for us. Right. So I don't always have to feel like it in order for me to still be able to effectively get through the rosary. But the other thing is like, because of our weakness, it's easy to fall out of habit. And I prayed the rosary on my own for, I don't know, 6-7 years, every day on my own, never prayed it with anyone else. But then October 7th of 2019, which actually coincided with when Matt Frad promoted us for the first time, and we went from selling an average of 1 to 3 rosaries a day. We sold 50 rosaries that day. But on that day, I had worked with my parish to start a live rosary. And we were going to commit to doing the live rosary for 30-ish days up through like November. I want to say there's a November feast day, Marian feast day, like the 19th or something like that. And so we did it on Zoom. We did it in the chapel. We recorded it and streamed it live on Facebook. And so I went from praying it daily on my own to praying it with a couple of people. And then it became a couple more people. And after we were done, we were like, hey, should we just keep going through the end of the year? Sure. Kept going through the end of the year. Hey, should we like keep going through the new year? Sure. And then boom, COVID hit. And now we had a thing going where you could pray with us every single day, even though you couldn't go to mass, even though you couldn't do a lot of things, you could still pray with us daily.
Wow.
And so I've been doing that now for almost, I guess, it has been 4 years and going still. And it's like, I don't like praying the rosary alone anymore. So going back to that question, I think I felt like I've received a special grace where the rosary was not difficult for me. I don't want to discount that. I don't want to suggest that it's just easy for everybody to pray the rosary. I've heard a lot of people that have expressed frustration and or, you know, some obstacle where it's really, really difficult. They don't enjoy it. They don't get anything out of it. And I would say to those people who feel that way, but also feel like it's still probably my best option because I've struggled to do ever anything else, have some accountability. Because I know that even if I don't feel like it, the guy that prays with me is waiting for me to join him. And if I don't join and I don't show up, then he's got to get a sub, which we can do, but I have to, it forces me to be accountable to, can I really not join? And sometimes, no, I can't. I'm sick, or, you know, the kid's sick, or I've got a meeting, or I'm traveling and I'm on the West Coast and it's, you know, starts at 4:30 and 7:30, right? So there's legitimate reasons, but I have some accountability and responsibility to show up and pray the rosary with Gordon and this group of guys and men and women. And so I think accountability can be a really great tool for those who struggle to pray it daily, but again, know that praying the rosary daily is probably the thing that they should be doing because everything else they've struggled with.
Well, and I can point to some great, like, manly saints, like a Padre Pio or John Paul II or Fulton Sheen, who that was their daily discipline and it bore fruit. And it didn't mean every day you were levitating, but it was this daily meetup where you pondered the mysteries. And, but I love what you said too. For some people, it's not their cup of tea, and that's fine. For some people, it's intimidating. And to that, you can start small. You just do 10 instead of the whole rosary. You can start with 10. Like 10 Hail Marys, and yeah, just do that for a week and see what happens. For some people, there may be a psychological block where they were maybe forced to pray the rosary, or it just was more mechanical.
It's a trigger.
It was, yeah. So there's, like you said, like there may be an obstacle that's legit to look at and say, okay, yeah, you had a bad experience of the practice of the rosary. And that may be worth exploring and talking about. And you and I were chatting before we began, and I'd love to just get into this a little bit, is there being this body soul composite, there are these spiritual aspects of our life as a disciple. There's also the psychological. It's all built like the human formation of the person is this looking at the whole. And it's something that Jackie and I love talking about. It's something that's kind of the through thread of our show is the human formation. It was why we love kind of bringing in this spectrum of different guests and friends and people in the ministry world to talk about like how they just experience greater human formation and what that's looked like. And we even were talking about just some of the psychological stuff we've been mutually like kind of separately like learning along the way. Yeah. So I'd love to just kind of get into that as we start to land the plane of the conversation.
Yeah. So I think there was a moment, you know, where it's like, okay, I'm doing all the, I've learned all the rules. I've read all the books. I'm doing all the Catholic things. I'm going to Mass every day and I'm going to adoration and I'm praying the rosary and I'm going to confession. And it's like, but I still don't feel that peace and that joy that I'm supposed to. What's wrong with me? And I think there was a period of time where it's just like, okay, I'll just keep doing more of those things. But they never really got me closer. And so I found myself in therapy at some point. And I think it started with, as human beings, we have a need to be known, to be heard, to be seen, to be loved, to be understood. I didn't know these things at the time, right? And so I think at the time I looked everything mostly from a spiritual perspective of like, okay, if like I'm a holy person, then maybe I won't have these things, like, or things will be fixed. And so I found myself in therapy this probably 7+ years ago. And it's been, and I still go and still with the same guy. He's been fantastic. And it's, I'm fortunate that he is Catholic. It is not a requirement in order for you to have a good, healthy, positive therapy experience, because you're working on kind of the mind, like the psychological element. Obviously you don't want somebody that is, anti-Christian, right? Because there's a lot of really, really dangerous, let's say like theories about the mind that contradict our faith, right? But as long as you can find somebody who has a worldview that cooperates with Christianity and Christian principles, you can probably have a very, very healthy and positive experience. So I'm fortunate that he's also Catholic. But that started a kind of a new chapter in my life of going, of not just looking at everything from a spiritual perspective, but looking at it from a human formation perspective of knowing myself. And eventually that he and that therapy experience led me to, it led me first to, Dr. Greg, and I did his like mindfulness retreat, which I think is probably when I first admitted that like I struggle with anxiety. Because it like the, and going through his mindfulness retreat, it was a lot about noticing feelings and emotions and body sensations, and then just letting them be there, not fixing them, not like stuffing them, but just letting them exist and being okay that they exist, and but not acting on them. And this was really hard, because like for the first 2 weeks I didn't notice anything. It was like nothing's going on. And then I started to notice things that I've never noticed before. Like a tightness in my jaw. And I started to notice where my frequent headaches were coming from. Not like mentally, psychologically, but like physically, my headaches were coming from here. Like they started here and they grew from there. And eventually I'd have to take Tylenol. Otherwise I'd have to take a nap. So I first started noticing like sensations in my body, like my body's trying to tell me something. And then I eventually started connecting those to like impulses and behaviors and like and emotions. And like as I'm telling you this, like I'm feeling it in my stomach, like a shaky feeling, which usually comes from just a, you know, a part of me that like that desperately wants to be known and loved. And so after I finished the mindfulness retreat, you know, my therapist had talked to me about IFS several times, and I was like, okay. And I looked at it initially as like a thought exercise, like an intellectual exercise of this thing to learn and memorize. And it's like, okay, it's one more thing now that I know about. But as I started getting into IFS, which is internal family systems or IFS informed therapy, but it's a way of understanding yourself. It's a way of knowing yourself. And eventually that led me into the RCC, which is like the resilient Catholics community. It's led by Dr. Peter Malinowski. If you have like show notes, it'd be soulsandhearts.com. Cause I don't want to try and like explain what IFS is, because I'm going to do a bad job. What I can say is that I've been doing it for 2 years now. You know, I've been in therapy for many, many years now, and it has changed my understanding of God. It has changed my understanding of myself. And it has led to more sustained and frequent periods of time where I feel joyful, I feel peaceful, And IFS talks a lot about the eight C's. The ones that jump out to me are always calm, confident, curious, and compassionate. Curious, not in the dangerous sense, but in the sense of like, there's probably good intentions here. I want to understand them, versus a highly critical part that just says, you're probably an idiot, and I just need to validate that you're an idiot, right? Or, and that could be to yourself or to other people, right? And so I think what was the most shocking revelation was how much of my time spent feeling angry or anxious or afraid, at, you know, with myself, with my circumstances, with other people, stemmed from just not knowing myself, understanding myself, or liking myself or parts of myself. Where it's like, if I struggle with like addiction, right? And I'm highly critical of that part of me that struggles with addiction, I'm going to be highly critical of everyone else who has addictive behaviors, right? Because it's like, I don't like that part of me. There's no way I'm going to like that part of you. It's why we're most often critical with, most critical of the parts of our kids that most resemble the parts of us that we don't like.
Yep.
Right? Because I don't like that part of me. I want to get rid of it. I want to fix it. And so coming to this understanding that like, I can't love somebody else more than I love myself. And I don't mean in like secular, like love is love, or, you know, self-love kind of crap, which isn't love at all. It's just indulgence. I'm talking about loving yourself the way that God loves you, seeing yourself the way that God sees you, knowing yourself, understanding yourself, hearing yourself the way that God does. You can't do those things in relationship with other people better than how you do that with yourself, from the standpoint of, do I listen to myself? Do I understand myself? Do I see myself the way that God sees me? And the answer to those questions was no, I didn't. And so the last 2 years, especially doing this IFS program, has really changed, like I said, how I understand God. And it's kind of brought, like, brought a new light to the spiritual realm. And so I think to conclude, I would say this. It's like, if you're already happy and you're filled with joy and you love life, then you probably don't need this. But if you have been on a journey for a long time and you feel like you're not making progress, and you've spent most of your time in the spiritual realm, then maybe it is something to look into, because we are mind, body, and soul. And if you just take care of your soul spiritually, you still have a mind, you still have a body that needs to be taken care of. And this human formation arena is a really, really, really critical ingredient in taking care of your mind and understanding yourself on a human natural level. And so it's like, that's where, that's been my experience with it. And so if you find yourself in a similar boat that I was a couple of years ago, where I, there were still some missing pieces, then it might be something to look into.
Well, first of all, thank you for your incredible vulnerability in going there, in sharing all that. Great job in trying to synthesize some of these teachings.
It's tough.
Because that's another hour. And I was largely ignorant of IFS before doing the mentorship training program with Dr. Greg Bataro and the Catholic Psych Institute. And then you just see it everywhere. Because it's, there's a reason, like, between like the Catholic and Protestant waters alike, I'm seeing IFS everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just speaking to a need we all have, like, we, and it gives language to, in a non like academic jargon kind of way, like the parts of us. Like, there's a part of me that's excited, there's a part of me that's terrified. Like, okay, well, let's talk about that part of you that's terrified. And without it, and it can sound kind of crazy, but as you settle into it, as this way of seeing yourself as this multitude of parts around a self, like yourself, like, and how these parts can want to steer the bus, like they can want to take over, they can blend, and before you know it, like, you've been acting out of this part for years. This part is afraid to let go. You can't, like, the call to love others as you love yourself. It's like, yeah, I love myself, moving on. It's like, no, but do you really love yourself?
Right. Generally, we all love parts of ourselves, the parts of ourselves that other people like, right? Mm-hmm. And the parts of us that we don't like because somebody else at some point in our life said, I don't like that part of you either. And oftentimes we, without realizing it, because a lot of this happens when we're younger, we say that part isn't safe. It's not safe for me to have these feelings. Like, for example, a good example would be like an angry part, where I, in middle school, I called a girl a bad name, out of anger. She was being mean and I called her a bad word. And she got our entire friend group not to talk to me for 2 weeks. And this was like, you know, this is sixth grade, right? So it's like, I only have these friends. None of them are talking to me. It could have been like 2 hours, but it felt like 2 weeks. Right. But like, what did I learn? I learned it's not okay to get angry. And that's oversimplification, right? That wasn't probably the only time. And the problem with that is it's like, well, it's not okay to act that way. The anger wasn't the problem. It was, you know, it was the response, right? So, but you know, when you're young, right, you don't know that. And it's like, your parents aren't there to help. There's no teachers around. Even if they were around, they wouldn't know what to do other than to kind of punish the behavior. And so we have all of these life experiences where there's a part of us that kind of gets exiled and kicked out of the group. It's like, you are not safe. Because when you're around, when this part's driving the bus, you're either too needy, you're too angry, you're too emotional, you know, you're too happy, you're too mopey. And it's like, so we just push that part aside. And it's like, I'm much safer if I'm only these parts that people like. But then we lose a part of ourselves, and we also don't like a part of ourselves, and they don't go away. We just mm-hmm. bury it. And so that process of kind of revisiting those things can be really scary, but it can be very healing, to know that actually, no, God made you with that part. God made you good. That part of you that feels angry, and that especially is hypersensitive to injustices has a place in your life, a good place in your life. The key is not to let that part of you run the whole show, but to be part of an integrated self where all of you and your parts are moving in the same direction. And that requires discernment and understanding yourself and not being driven by the impulses of just a part of you versus the whole self. For some, that might make some sense. For others, it might not make any sense. But to your point, it is becoming a lot more common. Like Father Boniface Hicks just spoke with Matt Frad for 3 hours and talked at length about IFS. So if this is the third time you've been hearing about it and you feel, you know, curious, keep looking into it. Because yeah, I'm not going to be able to succinctly explain it and convince you that you should pursue it. I can only say that it's made a significant impact in my life. And so it's more of like a lived experience kind of recommendation than anything else.
Well, it's just cool to see so many faith leaders picking up on it and say like 90 to 95% of this is really good and we can use it and it's producing results. And gives language to, why am I stuck in the same sin? Like, yes. Why can't I get over this aspect? Why is this lie that I believe about myself? Like, why is it so deep? It helps conceptualize it can help bring light to those areas of our psyche where, as you said earlier, if we are only trying to pray it away, like using the sacraments as kind of a car wash, but we're not, like Sister Miriam says, we're not going to the root. Like if you don't get to the root, it's not just gonna, the fruit is gonna, I forget the rhyme, but it's like if we're stuck in the same habits over and over again, internal family systems, IFS, soulsandhearts.com. I'm going to put links in the show notes for sure. God wants our fullness of life. He wants us to be healed. And we're blessed to live in an era where we aren't just given the sacraments and these great spiritual tools and high quality wooden rosaries. There's also this plethora of the psychological sciences that we can trust as disciples to bear fruit. And the last thing too, it's like, you can't do it alone. Like you can read a book about this stuff, but you know, we intellectualize or we'll like kind of apply it, but not really. Maybe like that's been my struggle, is I love learning about this stuff and it's like, yeah, I'm moving on. I don't need it. I'm fine though. And yep. Within my Catholic psych training, it's like, I'm forced to sit with my training director and like, she's essentially small grouping me. And I'm like, you know, 2 weeks into the program, I'm like, I'm fine. And then all of a sudden I'm crying. I'm like, well, I have parts.
Right. Cause there's a part of you that's not fine. And what you said, I think this is the compassionate voice of the church. There's two things you said. One is IFS was not created by a Catholic person. But to your point, 90% of it that was created or it wasn't created, defined, right? Mm-hmm. And mapped out is consistent with church teaching, which is why it's really important to find someone who understands both the spiritual element and the teachings of the church and this thing called internal family systems, which gives language to the way that we understand ourselves, because those two things are necessary. Because if you just go the IFS route from a secular perspective, it leads to a path that says, when you're in self, then you're perfect and you don't make any bad choices. It's like, that's theologically inaccurate. So that's number one. Number two is the compassionate part of why do I keep doing the things that I do not want to do? The answer is not because you're a bad person and you're not praying enough. That's what the devil wants you to believe. Mm-hmm. And that's what most of us tend to believe until we get to a place where we have a better understanding of ourselves and realize, as sad as it is, that those bad behaviors have good intentions, because they protected us in the past. But obviously they have consequences. You know, they have spiritual consequences, they have relational consequences, they have natural consequences. And so it doesn't suggest that the behavior is good, but it does suggest that there are good intentions behind those behaviors. And there's a root cause. And until you get to that root cause, which is really, really tough emotional work, because it requires you to look at things you don't want to look at, to recall things you don't want to recall, and to find kind of unburdening and healing, which is really, can be very scary. But until you do that, the best case scenario is you just stuff the bad behavior.
Right.
And I have lots of experience doing that, and it never led to any real sustained joy because I just hit a part of me. It's like, that part's bad. As long as I don't let that part come out, then I'll be good enough for God, and then God will love me. It's like, so if you ever thought those thoughts, then, you know, it might be something to look into, because I've been there and I know what that feels like, and I still struggle with it, but not nearly as much as I used to.
Yeah, praise God. Man, we could do another 3 hours, apparently, on business lessons learned and psychology. But let me cut it here, and maybe we'll have to have you back on if you're ever willing and able. Where can, if they don't know of your work, where can people find you, Jonathan?
CatholicWoodworker.com is probably, I mean, that's our website. We're on Instagram and Facebook. But that's the best place to find us. I would encourage you to subscribe to our email list, because I share more about this in our monthly blog articles. We still write, because not everyone's always looking to buy spiritual weapons. And so when we're not, you know, when you're not buying spiritual weapon from us, we hope that you can find some wisdom through our content, our email list. So, I'd recommend checking that out. But that's the best place to find us.
Awesome. Yeah. We'll put all that in the show notes. Jonathan, thank you so much for being here. It's been a pleasure.
My pleasure too. Great speaking with you, and appreciate the invitation.
Yep. All right. See you guys next episode. God bless.